Welcome to the Gray Area Podcast, where we talk about all things black and white, but especially the gray. Lately, I've been thinking about being a church kid, being a church girl, all the pros and cons to it. I feel like, yes, there's more pros than cons, but I do feel like there are things that I figured out along the way that I was like, oh, I kind of wish that was different, or, you know, this went different. But one of the things I would say I've noticed throughout my life, the pattern that I've noticed throughout my life is that a lot of my foundational values that, you know, through my career, through friendships, they all have been based off of Christ or, you know, my friends being church kids. Even my best friend, one of my best friends, we've been best friends since diapers, we like to say. It's like a built-in bestie almost. Like I started going to the church in, I think my mom said 99. So 99, I was two. And then her dad is the pastor of our church, Burning Bush International Ministries, Bishop Shelby, and he's running for general board. So make sure you vote. But anyways, I've been friends with her since diapers. And then my other best friend, we've been friends since sixth grade. So the thing that I've realized is it's the church connection. My best friend from sixth grade, she's a church girl too. And we were friends. It was always four of us. It was two other girls and then her and I. And we're the only two that's still friends. And we were the only two church girls in the group. We just had so much to relate on. Our family values were the same, which I realized that makes a huge difference. In friendships, any type of relationship, that foundation of Christ is so important. So now that I'm older, I can really appreciate all the times I was at church, because honestly, I don't know how many friends or who all I would have in my community if I did not have church as the foundation. Even moving away, the friends that I have now, where I bought my house, I connected with them through church. I connected with them through church, and then having like-minded people around you, you just keep connecting with other people. And then me being a service provider, I'm very big on showcasing that I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian cosmetologist. When I had my own suite, it was very important for me to have gospel music playing and not just any type of music playing, different things like that. But would you say that church is the reason why you have a lot of friends, or have built the community that you have? Do you feel like you were able to find yourself through church? Do you feel like you were able to find yourself through school? What did that look like for you? Even if you aren't a church kid, maybe you aren't a church kid and you grew up in a subdivision and you went house to house, and that's just your foundation of having a community of people around you. What was that like for you as a kid? Do you think that it affected you today in a positive way or a negative way? Do you feel like you would want to raise your children the same way? Would you change anything? I think I would definitely raise my kids the same way. There were times when I didn't want to go to church. I would be like, I want to stay home. I didn't have that option. My mama said, you going to church? My dad wasn't even in church. And my dad was like, your mom wants you to go to church, so you're going to church. That's just how it was. But I'm so glad that they did that, because it, like they say in the Bible, like, train up a child the way that they should go and they shall never depart. I felt like no matter how far I got, I still wanted to come back to church. No matter how far, you know, any of my friends, we went on our own paths, we always came back to our core being church, Christ, and God. And no, church isn't, you know, the relationship with God, but it does help curate and help you maintain your walk with Christ. So it was a big part of my upbringing, if not my whole upbringing. Even my friends would say, oh, we're not going to ask Maya, you know, my friends at school, we're not going to ask Maya because we know she's going to be at church. And I used to be like, no, you can ask me. I'm going to ask my mom. My mom would be like, you know, we got service. And I'd be like, y'all, you know, I got a service. I'm not going to be able to go. Or I'll be like, you know, I really don't want to go anymore. The whole time I do, I just don't want to tell them that my mom said I can't go. Because everyone knew I was a church kid. Maya was in church. Even the guys, I would like guys, they would be like, man, she can't do nothing because she always at church, which saved me a lot. It saved me so many times because the guys were like, oh, that's that church girl. They didn't want to mess with me. Like, I was just like, what? Like, what? Am I ugly? I used to think that I was ugly because guys would not want to deal with me because they always knew that I wasn't free. They always knew that, you know, on the days where people wanted to go to the parties and different stuff, I was at church. I was at some type of conference, some type of convention. And then even if I was out with my friends, sometimes I would have to bring my little sisters with me because my brother plays sports. And it was just all the different things. But I would say it definitely helped mold me into who I am today. And it helped me to really set the foundational values and goals for my relationships moving forward, whether they're friendships or dating relationships, business relationships, so on and so forth. I kind of feel like church is, it can be, I feel like, a great networking tactic because you can bond with a lot of people and connect with a lot of people because maybe you both are Christian, maybe you both are Kojic, maybe you both are Baptist, whatever it may be. I feel like it's almost a great network to have and connection to have with others. And, you know, I like the benefits of it. I would say those are the pros. The cons, I would say, is you can't get away with a lot of stuff. And it's not even necessarily a con, but I would say because you're a believer, because you have claimed Christ and made it public and made it known, there's so many things you can't get away with. Like I said, guys wouldn't talk to me because they knew that I wasn't available as the other girls. I was in church. So the cons were at the time, like, dang, I didn't have no friends, or, you know, people didn't want to be around me. But it's like, I still have friends. I just, you know, when you're a kid, you think that the world is ending because, you know, maybe somebody doesn't like you or they don't want to hang out with you, whatever that looks like. But yeah, I would say there's not too many cons of it. There's a lot of benefits of protection. There's times where I could have gotten in trouble, but my, you know, maybe a teacher knew that my mom was a believer, or that I was a believer, and they would be like, they would just give me like a little pep talk of like, now you know better than this. Your mama raised you better than this. She is a God-fearing woman. Whatever it was, I would get like a slap on the wrist compared to the other heathens that went to my school. So that was, I would say there's not too many cons to it. There's a lot of pros. But how do you feel about being a church kid or being a believer? Do you think there's pros? Is there cons? Just let me know how you feel in the comments. Whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can come to my Instagram and let me know, Maya K. Lynn, or you can follow me on YouTube and let me know under the comment section under this video. So it's a new week. Let's check in. It's Monday. How are you feeling? What do you need to take to get the week started? Are you feeling good? Are you feeling energized? Are you feeling ready to tackle this week? If I could say how this week is going for me and something that I'm looking forward to this week, I'm looking forward to new opportunities coming up on taking my test, my real estate exam. So prayerfully, I'll pass that so I can move forward in that. And I'm super excited about that. So if I could say something that I need to take what you need, I would say I'm taking back the idea of not being enough, feeling inadequate. Like I talked about in my first episode of the podcast, that inadequacy right now has been coming up a lot for me. So I refuse to let the feeling of inadequate like creep in and take over. I refuse to let fear take hold of my mind and the things that I know that God has told me to do. whether it be in real estate, whether it be with a podcast, whether it be, you know, personally, financially, mentally, spiritually, whatever it is, I want to take back the authority. I want to take back my power. I want to take back, you know, my focus. I want to take back my clarity. I want to take back everything that may have been distracting me. I want to take back, you know, just zoning in on those goals, honing in on those goals and saying, okay, God, it's just me and you. Let's go. It's just me and you. I have some things that have come up recently that have made me kind of resettle in, okay, it's go time. It's go time. And I think that was, you know, going to Georgia and realizing, like, I still want to move there. I still want to move there. I still see myself there. I was there hanging out with my cousin, and I just absolutely loved it. Also, shout out to her. She was watching one of my videos. And in my first couple, like my first four videos, I have a different case for my iPad. And she saw it and messaged me. And she started sending me links on Amazon, like, what iPad do you have? Do you have this one? Do you have that? And I'm thinking she's just asking for advice or whatever. This girl was tired of my raggedy case. My raggedy case. And she ordered me one and got it sent to me. So shout out to you, Sierica Saruki. I love you. Thank you so much for my case. It's beautiful. Yeah, I would say I'm taking that back. I feel like at times I can get comfortable, even though maybe a lot of my friends or, you know, my family members may see it and say, no, you're always going, striving for something new, striving for something better. But sometimes I do feel like I get stagnant and I have to almost, you know, shock myself. Like I have to, you know, shock myself to be like, okay, yeah, I'm back. I'm awake. Let's get it going. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. And I think at times people can think that, oh, I had a conversation with one of the girls from my church about this. And we were talking about how, a lot of people may think that I'm overworking myself or I'm doing too much or this, that, and the third, which is very possible. But she also reminded me, maybe you're graced for this. And that just changed my perspective completely and totally. And me and my best friend, we talk about that. We talk about how we're both overachievers. We're both people that like to, you know, do multiple things. We're multi-talented. So to other people, to people who aren't multi-talented, it's very hard to understand why multi-talented people have their hands in maybe 8 different things and they're able to accomplish it. When you're multi-talented and multi-gifted, sometimes people don't understand how you can maintain and achieve so many different things, but sometimes you're just graced for it. Sometimes you don't even know that you're graced for it until maybe you talk to someone else and you're like, oh, this is a normal, because a lot of times people associate it with burnout, but the difference with multi-talented people and burnout is we can take on a lot before we can reach burnout. Some people get to burnout and they realize, whoa, I can't take on that much. Sometimes multi-talented people can know their limits, but sometimes they don't always know their limits. But sometimes it's multi-talented people, they can't just sit on ideas. I know for me, I can't sit on ideas. Once I have an idea, I have to do it. Because once God shows me it, it's like, oh my goodness, now I have to do it. So it's more of a burden to sit on that idea than it is to achieve that and go after it. Some people feel the fear and, you know, anxiety of trying to complete an idea. I get the anxiety and fear of not completing it. So it's a little bit different. And I do feel like, you know, my best friend deals with that too. And so that's how we can kind of feed off of each other, because a lot of times people don't understand how that can work or how we do it. Or sometimes they're always like, oh, you need to rest. You need to rest. But sometimes, you know, okay, I have to get this done. Like I need to get this done. Like God is calling me to do this. So I have to do it. So I feel like I am just looking forward to just really honing in and focusing in on the goals that I have now, you know, I feel like resurrected. I feel like I'm going after some things like I was before, but now with clarity and a new headspace today versus when I first, you know, went after these things. So Today, I wanted to talk about collecting data. So if you don't know what collecting data is a term that I actually got from my pastor's wife, my bishop's wife, First Lady Shelby. One of the things that she told us is collect data. And it's not to, you know, use it in a way to manipulate people or anything like that, but it's a dating term to really make sense of what the goal is. So when I first started dating, I was not mature enough for one to date. I had no guidance or clarity or anything. I pretty much like hopped right into it. And one of the mistakes that I made was pretty much not, you know, locking in on what my goal is or collecting that data beforehand to see, like, is this who I want to be with? Is this someone I can see long term? I just pretty much was going with the flow. And sometimes that works, but in this case, I feel like it's necessary to make sure that you're not going with the flow, that you're pretty much making sure that this is what God has ordained for you and what for your life. So collecting data is just pretty much you dating, but you're not, maybe you're not locking it in on that person. Maybe you're dating multiple people and you're just collecting that data, trying to see what you do and don't like. And of course, some people can be very picky, so it may not work for everyone, but it was one of the best things I heard, especially getting out of a relationship that kind of made me focus in on what I felt like was important and how to date as a Christian female, because the world tells you to date this way. They tell you to sleep around, do all the different things, test out this and that. But when you go in with the mindset of collecting data, you get to refer back to the biblical ways of dating. You get to refer back to the biblical mindset of finding a husband finding you and being found by a man. You get to relate back to those. You get to say, okay, is this a godly man? Does he kind of check off all these boxes? Of course, nobody's going to be perfect. And same for women. If you're checking off that box and seeing if she's a godly woman, but nobody's going to be perfect. So there are things that you have to pray about and say, God, is this something that I'm willing to compromise on, or is this something that I should compromise on? If not, show me, give me clarity, fast and pray on it. I think a lot of times we don't fast or pray over our dating situations. We may just go out there and date, but I've been in some situations where I'm like, all right, let's try a different route. And I prayed about it and God literally gives me an answer right away. And I tell them like, Nope, not gonna work. And it's not in a mean way. I'm someone where I don't like to waste time because I was in a relationship for such a long period of time. Now I'm to the point where I know what I want, I know what I need. And even if I don't know every little detail, I have a great idea as to what all that may look like for me. And I can remember going on dates and like telling a guy on the first date, like, this isn't going to work. Like, you know, I think you're a great guy, all the things. We had great conversation, but I don't think I'm ready for what you're ready for. And of course, most people aren't used to having those mature conversations. Maybe they're used to being ghosted or used to being, you know, toyed around with. But I knew for me that I wouldn't want somebody to play around with me. So I wanted to make sure that I was very open and honest and upfront with them. And I could tell that he was liking me like right off the bat. And I was like, okay, let me cut this off before it goes too far. And that was not, you know, not going past the first date. So I let him know, like, you know, I think you're a great guy, but I am not ready for what you're ready for. And in reality, it wasn't even that I wasn't ready for it. I just was not attracted to him in that way. So that was another thing. And I didn't want to tell him that because I could already tell that he was reading it. Like, he was getting defensive just based off of me telling him that. So I'm like, I don't want to tell him that because I'm not trying to do tit for tat. I'm not trying to poke at him. I'm not trying to, you know, make this that. I also was in another situation where, you know, is this a church boy thing? So I'm not really a church boy. I've never really dated church boys. Like, I've always wanted bad boys because church boys to me were like boring. They were boring or they were just super deep for no reason. Now I have a different outlook on them. It just depends on the person, of course, the character and integrity. But My experience is they try to lock it in quick. The guy was like, yeah, how do you feel about being a first lady? I'm like, sir. He was like, pray about it. I'm like, I definitely will, because the amount of times you've asked me this, and we only went on 2 dates. Which, of course, the other side of it is, of course, he knew what he wanted. He was very confident in that. I gotta respect that. But you should not be seeing, you should not be checking to see if somebody can only, you know, go along with the role that you may take on. There's a difference between the title and the call. So your title may be pastor, but your calling is to, you know, shepherd the people, to cover the people, to, it's not just a title. So I would have much rather him ask me, how is your walk going, and being more concerned about the spiritual part of it, not necessarily the title. And I felt like he was caring more about the title. So that's the only reason I was asking about. I felt like that was a red flag. So for me, collecting data, I was able to be like, nope, red flag, or that's not really something I'm willing to move past. And it's not even trying to be petty. It was just, you have to know what you're not willing to settle for, and you have to know what you're not willing to compromise on, and what God does not want you to compromise on. I believe that everyone is called to someone or something, and I was not called to them. They were ready to lock it in. I was ready to dip. Okay, just being honest, I was ready to dip. So one of the things I wanted to ask too is, when you were growing up in church, do you feel like you got a chance to really get the knowledge and gain knowledge on what dating is as a Christian? Do you feel like, you know, there's times when I think back, I'll speak for myself, there's times when I think back on, you know, the married people having sessions, the singles having a session, and then the kids having a session. But then when I look back, I was like, we were being taught, no offense, the singles ministry. When you get to a certain age, you get to join the singles ministry. So the singles ministry was being taught by somebody that had been single for like 30 years. I'm not trying to be like Sister So-and-so, dried up and washed out. I want to hear from brother and sister so-and-so that's been married for 40 years. What can they tell me? What can the married, because my goal is to be married. So what can they tell me? Not the person that's, you know, wanting to be married, but has not found that person in 20 plus years. And I understand being, you know, a successful single, but golly, that's not encouraging. That to me is very discouraging, to be taught by somebody, or to, you know, have somebody hosting something and the only thing they can tell you is about their dating experiences and how they're 40 years old waiting on God to send their husband. That is not encouraging to me, because Lord, don't let me be 40. Don't let me be 40 and without a husband. I won't even say it's the age. It's more so like, it's sometimes in church, I feel like people are liars. They be lying like, I'm just so full on the spirit. I'm just so full. I don't even think about a man. I'm just like, God is my everything. And it's like, I'm so glad. And I love that. And that's how it's supposed to be. But the truth of the matter is, I know you desire companionship, and you're over here trying to sell it to me. I desire companionship, and seeing you with no companionship is not making me want to listen to you. I'm trying to figure out what the married people are over there doing. So sometimes I want it. Most times, well, really, it's now that I've been in a relationship as serious as that one was, I'm like, wait, we never got to sit in. And I see that, you know, maybe they do it at the conventions and stuff, but I didn't grow up going to all the conventions in the other states. I only went to like the local ones, and we never had those conversations, not that I can remember. So I always felt like a lone wolf. Like, I always felt like, okay, I'm dating this guy. Maybe this is who I'm supposed to marry, because we've been together for so long, and, you know, I really like him. But it was just like, you, Even like talking to people and them saying like, you know, when that's your husband or your wife, I felt like I knew that was not my husband. Like I really liked and I really loved him. I knew that's not who God had called me to be with. So then that puts you in a sticky situation because now you're pretty much waiting for all hell to break loose instead of just leaving without there being an issue outside of, hey, God did, I don't feel like God called me to you. And how would you really approach that if, two, you're dating somebody who does not go to church? So remember earlier I said I like bad boys. So my ex wasn't a church boy. Like he grew up in church and around church, but he wasn't a churchgoer like me, which isn't a terrible thing. But I still was like, okay, I don't think that we're on the same page with this, with a lot of things. And so it just changed my mindset and my thought process when thinking about, you know, collecting data or dating to marry. I want to experience the way I want to experience dating and married life and single life the way that God intended on me to experience, which is being, you know, having an amazing experience, not just, you know, waiting for the dust to settle and being like, God, please, I hope that, you know, this works out, or, you know, I pray that, you know, blah, blah, blah. I want it to be a sure thing. I want to be confident in who God has called me to and who, you know, I'm called to. So I think collecting data is something that nobody really talks about, and there's no scripture behind that really that I could find or think about, but I feel like that's just something that people don't talk about. How do you feel? I want to hear from you. Maybe it's just me. Maybe you have heard that term, but there's so many things that I would like to, you know, kind of encounter or I see out there, like they have the what is it? The conversation podcast where you pretty much have they have those hard conversations and whatnot, but it's a secular conversation. We don't have those conversations as Christians. And I'm not saying have the same conversations they're having, but some of the questions and topics that they're talking about, I feel like we still need to talk about. Even though we're Christians, they still need to be addressed, like sex before marriage. Some people are like, oh, I'm testing out the car and, you know, I'm not about to buy a car that I didn't test drive. Okay, that's cool and all, but what about when you need that man to tarry on your behalf? Can that man pray? Can that man go before the Father and go to bat for you? Or do you have to go to bat for yourself every single time? Do you have to pull the weight of the relationship? And I saw something or I heard something where they were talking about, yes, it's okay to date someone or even marry someone who may not be saved. It's nothing against the person, you know, there's nothing bad about them. They're a believer, but maybe they're not walking the path of righteousness. But they also mention, do you know how much crazy faith it takes to believe that someone one day will be saved, potentially, instead of already getting someone who already is saved, who already has the walk? And that's not to say that they're perfect, but when they put it like that, I'm like, pfft. We always want somebody who's lukewarm or just enough so we can probably just stay just enough, right? We don't want someone to challenge us or make us better. And the whole purpose of marriage is to glorify God. So why would I marry someone who does not honor and glorify God? That is just a whole other perspective to think about, the things you don't think about. So it's like when dating, it's important to collect the data. You got to collect all the data. And I feel like, too, when you eliminate a lot of the worldly things, sex before marriage or anything of that sort, seeing each other in spaces where you feel like it would tempt you guys to try something, you have so much time to really focus in and talk about the things that, you know, have you been delivered from fornication or lustful desires? Have you been delivered from, you know, those secret thoughts or those things of those that nature? Those are the conversations that you can have with people when they are serious on their walk. It's not an awkward conversation. It's not a deep conversation. It's these are things that I really need to ask you about, because once we get married, I don't want to be fighting no demons that you could have, you know, rebuked before we got together. Or maybe we can handle this together, or God has called me to walk you through it, or you walk me through some things. But I think it goes back to just thinking about the godly principles of marriage. Those things matter. Those things matter. And yeah, so collect the data. Collect all the data you need. Take your time. My bishop, I just saw a post from him in AIM, and he was talking about a lot of people want the marriage without him. We're idolizing the idea of marriage, but we're not giving God that idol. We're not trading that burden over to God. We're not trading that yoke over to God so he can take care of that. He's already preparing the husband and the wife for you. He does not need any assistance. He just needs you to focus in and stay true to his word and do your part. He will do the rest. And of course, you know, you approach the person, whatever, but you will know if, like, imagine being so in tune with God that you see someone and you're like, that's her, that's him. Like, it automatically clicks for you. Like, I can just imagine it being like no other time, no other dating experience. You're just like, you know, in awe. And maybe sometimes you may not like that person right away, but eventually you may just be like, wow. Wow, God just showed me a whole other light. Some friends of mine just had some friends that got married, and she never found the guy attractive. Like, he's liked her since school, since like maybe even middle school. And now they're way past high school age, and they just got married. Like, she was not attracted to this man. And then he went off and, you know, matured and got a good job. And now she like, okay, you're looking kind of good. So it's like this whole time he was devoted to her. Like, he knew this whole time, like, that's my girl. That's her. I'm gonna stick beside her. And she was like, mm-mm. But now they're married, and I think that's all about timing. Like, imagine if that happened prematurely. Imagine if that happened too soon. He or she probably wouldn't have been ready for what they're going to have today. And that's not to say marriage is perfect or anything, but I do feel like when you do it at the right time, when you do it in God's time, he will cover and protect you and guide you and walk you through. He's going to equip you for the things and the trials that marriage will bring you. The enemy doesn't stop attacking you because you got married. He attacks you even more because he doesn't want anything to glorify God. He doesn't want two people at that to come together and glorify God and then be fruitful and multiply and glorify God. Like, double whammy. But I hope and pray that you got something out of this today. I just want to talk. I just want to chat. And make sure you always go back to your Bible. You always refer back to scripture. You always go and do your own research for yourself. Seek God for yourself and figure out what that looks like for you. But my suggestion is collect the data. And until God shows you him or her, just keep seeking him and having fun in Christ, having fun with your friends, whatever that looks like. And never forget, the Lord is faithful, the Lord is kind, and I will see you next week. Thank you for tuning in.